the approval of the governor. And so what we have is a situation where, in my opinion, we're the only state in the nation, from what I can gather, that has the ability, or has in its budgeting process, a three-quarter vote to spend certain types of money. Now, they have certain types of other programs that they do that, I think, is more on a two-thirds vote in most places. But what we're looking at here, Mr. Chairman, is we're looking at the addition of about $50 million, maybe declining down to $40-some million in the future years, of general fund revenue to try and balance our budget without having to be subservient to a three-quarter vote, basically. That's what we're looking at. I think we're also leading to the fact that with this bill, and hopefully future ones, that we will be able to balance our budget without having to have a three-quarter vote, like almost every other state does in the nation. It keeps you from being hung out on the limb, so to speak. What I want to see us do, and what I think we're headed for trying to do, hopefully, is create mechanisms that don't make it mandatory that we have to have an income tax in the state, that we take away money from the hard-working people of the state. If we have to, someday we do, but it prolongs that. When we start taking money out of the people of the state's pockets, income tax, we are not going to help our economy grow. We are not going to help it grow. Someday it may happen, but it's going to hurt our growth. We need to think about that, and I think the Alaska public needs to think about that. So this bill is not the cure-all by any means, but it's a step. You know, and I'll be the first one to say that if we need to help move our economy along and get more revenue in other ways, I'll be more than willing to look at doing that. But this is a step that truly does not hurt any Alaskan. It doesn't hurt an Alaskan at all. $1 or $20 out of their dividend check is not going to hurt anybody. Now, if we took massive amounts of money out of the permanent fund and the dividend check went down, absolutely, I'd agree with that. But this is a $1 to $20 out of your check. If people look at what's going to happen to the dividend this year, or the very realistic chance of it, that dividend check compared to last year is going to be significantly lower. Nothing the legislature did. Nothing we did at all. So I just ask the members here to think about this. This is something, and I think it's also important that we say, we're not looking at spending more money. We're looking at balancing a budget. I don't believe this legislature is looking at spending huge more amounts of money than the last legislature did. I think we're actually looking at trying to spend less money, if at all possible. So it's not a increase the spending type thing, as sort of was alluded to, but it's trying to hold the line and spend less out of a three-quarter required budget area. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Stokes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I'd be remiss in not commending you for all the work you've done on this. I might disagree that you might have been 5 years early. We wouldn't have this tool today if it would have passed back when you first introduced it. So it's I'm glad the tool is still out there to be a subject of debate. And it's, I'm still a cautionary person on this one. There's still some play in this game here, and we'll continue to talk on it.
Representative Whitaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we build our debate, we often do so with in a vacuum, and we're fortunate in that we can do that, that we don't yell back and forth at one another. And there's been some of that today. We build our debating points in a vacuum, and when we do that, they sound pretty good. And those debating points are our basic premises. I won't comment on some of the basic premises that have been put forward in earlier discussions. But I will put forward what I consider to be the basic premises associated with this debate. And they are these. In 1980, when the legislature made a decision to put 50% of royalty proceeds into the permanent fund corpus, they did so because there was excess funds. There were excess funds available. They also did so in light of a $4+ billion general fund budget. Today, 23 years later, we have a $2+ billion general fund budget, and we do need the money. And so we spend less 23 years later and find that we need the money. We spend significantly less. Those are the basic premises. The fact is that the funds are needed in order to fulfill the basic responsibilities of the state. I commend sponsor of the legislation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Jewell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When we, of course, I wasn't at this table last year, but when we took this up last year, I was one of the few from my caucus that supported this bill. And I think I'll probably support it again. Having said that, yesterday we heard a bill where we were talking about incentives to do business. You know, at some point, whether the third floor chooses to do it or not, somebody's going to have to step up to the plate and resurrect a look down the line on how we're going to meet our financial obligations. We are going to have to talk about what we do with the permanent fund. We are going to have to talk about the industry and how we're taxing that area. And we're going to have to talk about broad-based revenue generation from the state. And but those discussions are going, they're mute. And I'm disappointed in that, because this can very easily fit into a package of things. And the reason I voted for it last year was because it was a step in that direction, because this was part of that package that we talked about. And it's obvious that the minority is not in leadership. We're in the minority. So I would implore the leadership to show some in this whole issue. Because we are moving in that cliff that we talk about. So that's all I have to say.
Representative Roper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'd like to thank Mr. Martin, who's been following this bill for some year, for testifying today, and those folks in the Kenai. But I just want them to know, and I think they would agree with me, that if I had my druthers, in spite of the conversation that Representative Croft and I were having earlier, I would go along with Representative Harris and say that what I would rather have this money used for is not to increase taxation. And that's one of, I think we had a good discussion here today, Mr. Chairman, that this, by passing this legislation, it gives us a multitude of different alternatives in which to look at. And that is certainly one of them, and one I would advocate.
Question.
Questions are called for to move the bill from committee with individual recommendations.
Please call the roll.
Yeah.
Yes.
Representative Moses?
No.
Representative Stoltz?
No.
Representative Whitaker?
Yes.
Representative Chenault? Representative Croft?
No.
I'm sorry?
No.
Representative Foster?
Yes.
Representative Hawker?
Yes.
Representative Jewell?
Yes.
Representative Meyer?
Yes.
Representative Harris?
Yes.
Representative Williams?
Yes.
3 no. 7 yes.
Bill moves from committee with individual recommendations.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next, we'll take up Senate Bill 20. Sponsor here?
Senator Cherry is on his way up as we speak.
We've had public testimony. We closed public testimony. We were waiting for comments from other people, and do we have any amendments before us?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to move the bill out of committee.
Been moved
with individual recommendations, and I don't know if there's a fiscal note or not.
Attached fiscal note?
Yep, attached fiscal note.
Any objection to this motion?
Do you want me to object?
No.
And I don't.
No objection. Senate Bill 20. Bill moves from committee with individual recommendations, and that's fiscal note. Next, we'll take up House Bill 159. And it's a CFAB bill. We do have a person here.
Chairman, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Mark Davis, and I'm the Director of Banking, Securities, and Corporations within the Division of Community and Economic Development. The bill we have before you, HB 159, makes two changes, one to the Banking Code, Title 6, and one to the State Code, which is Title 44. The first change in the Banking Code is to lengthen the exam time for small loan companies from the current 12 months to 18 months. What that does is allow my division more time to do those examinations if that time is needed because of budget constraints. Currently, all other institutions examined under the Banking Code, that is Title VI, are 18 months, and this is the only provision in the Banking Code that requires an annual examination. I would emphasize, however, that even with this change, the division would examine any small business company more frequently if it felt an examination was needed. That is, if we had done an examination and determined there was a problem, we could schedule an examination more rapidly than 18 months. So this is just to give the division discretion under the Banking Code and to put us in line with the 18-month cycle for all the other state chartered banks. The second change is in Title 44, which is not the Banking Code. It is actually the State Code. And in that code, the legislature created the Alaska Commercial Fishing Agricultural Bank. And at one point in time, the legislature put in a provision that the banking examiners would do what the statute calls a, quote, qualitative, end quote, examination of that institution. CFAB, however, is not really a bank. By statute, in Title 44, it is a cooperative that operates for the benefit of its members and is required by statute to prepare annually an audit by independent outside auditors. And this report, this audit report, is provided to the legislature by statute. Additionally, when this provision in Title 44 was enacted, CFAB had state funds. It was required to pay back those state funds within 20 years and in fact pay them back within 18 years, and they currently operate with no state funds. CFAB is also, by statute, subject to an audit by the legislature, and the provision that we've suggested deleting in Title 44 would not change that. That is, this bill, HB 159, would still make CFAB subject to a full legislative audit if this body should desire to do one, and would still require the outside audit report by outside auditors annually, which report must be submitted to the legislature. With regard to physical operations, I would note that the fees that are charged by the banking section of the division do not cover the cost of examination. In FY03, the costs of examination are estimated to be $635,069. The revenue generated by the fees we charge is estimated to be $276,000, which leaves a deficit of $359,000. By statute, the banking fees cannot discriminate against a state institution. That is, the fees must be the same as would be charged for a federally chartered institution, and that shortfall will probably exist as long as the legislature does not want any discrimination against state chartered institutions. I think the other issue for this committee is what is the difference between the audited report that CFAB must present to the legislature and the banking exam. First, an audited statement will report on a loan portfolio by major category. It will report interest that may be forgiven with respect to any particular loan. Also, the outside audit report will inform the legislature on changes in final payment dates. It will report on loans for which no payments were made. It will report on loans for which interest was lost. It will also identify and report on what accountants call non-accrual loans, which is what bank examiners call special loans. That is, loans that are not performing. An audited report will identify loans which do not perform and for which there is no payment being received either by principal or by interest. So that essentially what we're asking for is that provision to be allowed not to examine this bank under the special provision in Title 44. We already do not do a complete examination. It is what the legislature requires, which is a qualitative examination. And we believe that given the audit function that CFAB must perform by statute and must present to this body, that there are adequate provisions in place. Additionally, I would note that because the bank examination of CFAB is done under Title 44 and not under Title 6, that we have no enforcement powers with regard to this examination. That makes the CFAB examination unique. If we come up with a problem, there's nothing the Division of Banking, Securities, and Corporations can do about it because it's not under the banking code. That concludes my testimony. I welcome any questions.
We have questions? Representative Croft.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How much of the fiscal note is attributable to Section 1 and how much to Section 2? That, you know, seems like you would save money on both ends, but is it 50-50 or...?
I think actually the fiscal note is designed what we can just save by not filling this position and having more time to do small loan companies and not doing one bank exam. The CFAB exam takes 10 days. That's about the same time it takes to do a regular state chartered bank. So it would freeze us up to do other types of institutions. We're required to do premium loan companies, small loan companies, state chartered banks, and state credit unions. And one of our big pieces of business are state credit unions. But we are lucky in the sense that this state has two very large and successful state credit unions, but they require time to do them correctly.
Let me see if I can get the understand it. The move in Section 1 from 12 months to 18 months saves you most of the money, and the Section 2 is the one where it's the examination of the CFAB. That's the one that takes 10 days?
What we're doing is we're saying we're eliminating a position. That's essentially what's going on here, that we would have one less examination position to accommodate that. We looked at ways within our statutes that it made sense to reduce some of the service, but not all the service we provide. We have been required by the legislature to do an annual exam of small loan companies, and we feel that within an 18-month structure, we can provide the same service.
So
but
again,
that means in scheduling exams, Representative Croft, we can say, well, this small loan company was done within 18 months. We don't need to get to it again, so we have six more months. Now we're on the yearly cycle for, there's eight of them. So we have to do all eight exams in 1 year, plus the other institutions are in 12 months. So it's a matter of kind of lining out your troops and seeing where you can spend your resources.
Section 2 saves you that 10 days, and the other part of the year, if you will, 355 days, is saved by Part 1.
Right. It saves essentially a bank examination position. We think with these two changes, we can have one less examiner on the books, and we can provide the same service.
Because I don't have any problem with Section 1. It's Section 2, and particularly in note of in light of the letter from the CFAB, it seems to me that while Section 1 makes a lot of sense, if these things are regularly examined every 18 months, that we do that and change that, how much money do we bring in from Section 2? Is that the $25,000 that we bring in? Or
No, we charge fees to the small loan companies just like we do the bank.
Okay, so how much is of that of the 25 in revenue we're losing is CFAB and how much the small banks of Section 1?
Well, last year we charged CFAB $6,300 for the examination. It's gone from a high to low, and it's in the letter I think we provided. I became aware of that letter, by the way, and I made it available to the members of the House and the Senate because I didn't think people were aware of it. I just became aware of it because it went to the governor, and I wanted to make sure you all had it.
In effect, and I apologize, but the important point, because I think the bill's a good one, at least Section 1 is, and I'm just worried about Section 2, we use 10 days of time and get $6,000 for it.
Yeah, that's right. And so we go on the whole of it. But it's also whether we can use that examination time, since we have fewer examiners, to do a state chartered bank or a credit union. I guess the major distinction is CFAB does not take in money from the public. It's a cooperative. And what we're trying to do is look primarily at institutions which deal with the public, make sure that they're sound. One issue that CFAB raises is that it helps them with their credit rating, but that's really not the function of a bank examination. A bank examination is to make sure the depositors who put their money in there can get their money out and there's not going to be a bank failure. The creditworthiness of a particular institution is a different issue. And the policy issue is really whether you want to have state bank examiners doing a follow-up exam of the audit, or the outside audit that's already required by statute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions for the sponsor? The Representative Hawker.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, sir. Could you explain or expound a little bit on the organizational difference between CFAB and commercial banks or credit unions, that if and if that organizational difference is part of the basis and justification for the request to exempt CFAB from this examination requirement?
I think it is in part, also the history. CFAB is a creation of the legislature. As I said, it's in the state chapter, Title 44. It's not a bank. It was set up as a cooperative, which is set forth by statute in 4481.014. It's required to follow that structure. It had state funds at first. It does not now. It also has unique requirements in Title 44, one of which is 4481.200, which requires the bank to provide a report, including the audited financial statements, to the legislator each year, which includes a discussion of the bank's circumstances and operating during the period covered by the report, and, quote, any other information that the board believes would be of interest to the governor, the legislature, and the public, end quote. So this bank must, because it's cooperative, must semi-regulate itself and disclose any problems. What occurred was, in 1985, there were some problems with the bank, which I think are alluded to even in CFAB's letter here. The bank examiners were asked to do an examination, even though there was no statutory basis for doing that. I think really what this provision was adopted in 87, it should have been a sunset provision. Maybe said, you know, for 5 years while CFAB gets back on its feet, we'll use the bank examiners. And once that was done, it probably should have gone away. So the structure of the bank and the special reporting requirements are part of the reason I think the bill is appropriate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions for the sponsor? If not, you can just stay there. We do have an amendment. Representative Croft?
Yeah, very briefly, Mr. Chairman. I'll move amendment number one.
I'll object.
I think that the bill in section one is a very good step, that changing it to the standard, once I assured myself that was the standard, I believe it is, and changing to 18 months and the cost savings that come from it, absolutely appropriate. Section two simply deals with the CFAB examination, where it takes about 10 days, as we just heard in testimony, and they get about $6,000. CFAB, I think, makes a compelling point in their letter that here's an entity funded by its own members that wants this review, that values this review, that is willing to pay for this review. It seems to me the testimony was that doesn't quite cover the cost, that $6,000 for 10 days, though it seems like a lot, is not quite up for it. I believe even if it took a statutory change, that's what we're doing here anyway, and we could double it or whatever and have this quasi-state entity continue to receive, at cost if we need to, a service that they value and use and like. So I don't think we're, and it seems to me the testimony here was the vast majority of the savings. This is, Section 2 represents 10 days, the rest of that position, the other 355 is represented by this change from 12 months to 18 months. So we're keeping the vast amount of the savings. We're just allowing CFAB to continue to get this thing to the extent they find it valuable.
And can I ask the sponsor that CFAB wanted to pay for their own outside auditor? Could they do that?
Okay, right now they're required by statute. I guess there's two issues to respond to. I apologize, Representative Croft. I'm going to answer one and then get you the second.
Okay.
Thank you for your... they're required by statute to have the outside auditor do the report, and they're required to present that to the legislature under 4481.200. The scope of that audit could be expanded by CFAB if they wanted to have the portfolio of their loans examined beyond the points I brought out that are done under general accounting principles, which are the list that I just went through. That is, they could also ask outside auditors to tell them not only are loans not performing, but how good are they? Do we have good collateral? do we have a good loan back, file, et cetera. That is not necessarily done. Bank examiners traditionally look at poor loans and then sometimes grade what banks have thought were good loans into bad loans, and there can be differences of opinion. The second issue is one of savings. I think the question is really whether we need to have, whether we want to have an additional bank examiner, and part of that examiner's time dedicated to doing this task when CFAB can accomplish what we do by merely changing the scope of its audit report.
You're not supporting this amendment.
I do not.
Representative Stoltz?
Mr. Chairman, I might ask the sponsor of the amendment if he might thought about a sunset instead, so see if there indeed are problems, we don't have to go through a whole statutory process to fix them.
I mean, if I can understand, Mr. Chairman, sort of weaning them of this, doing it for a while longer, but having it sunset so they arrange somebody else to do it or whatever?
No, Mr. Chairman, no, I mean, sunsetting the requirement, but maybe giving it 2 years, so it's... we find out there has been a problem, we don't have to go through a whole statutory change again. And if there certainly isn't a problem, then it just lapses.
Well, that's interesting.
I'm just not trying to complicate things.
Yeah. We are.
May I respond if I might? I think the idea would be that what if in the future this institution develops a problem, how could the legislature effectively respond? That's why I emphasize in my testimony that the legislative audit would still be in the statute, can still be ordered by the legislature, and the legislature can use, if it wishes, the bank examiners as an arm of the legislative audit. So the powers of the legislative audit would still be here. So if a problem crops up, you can exercise that power, and you can use the division's resources if you so desire.
Representative Harris.
Just a clarification. You probably already said it, and I was probably half asleep when you said it, but... CFAB in their letter, as Representative Croft has mentioned, does not seem to be real excited about having their audit extended from 1 year to 18 months. With this amendment, you do take away the requirement for 1 year, and then it'll be changed over to 18 months for CFAB as well.
No, it wouldn't be.
Correct?
No, this only changes small loan companies, which are entitled six. From 12 to 18 months. Then CFAB is an annual examination required under Title 44. So the proposition for the committee is whether to eliminate CFAB in its entirety, not whether to change it. The president did not understand the bill correctly.
And obviously, I don't understand it either. They're saying in their letter that 4481-270D was a result of 87 legislation. And it required them to have an audit every year. Is that correct?
They have to have two. They have an outside audit by a CPA firm. They're required by statute, and they also have this bank examination.
And what happens when you eliminate this statute?
When you eliminate this statute, CFAB is still subject to an outside audit every year. That audit must include financials, and they must give that audit to the legislature. They must also make a report on the quality of the bank under.
But what happens? Why are we eliminating the statute then?
So that the bank examiners don't have to look at this particular institution, which is not, which is a cooperative and not a bank open to the public.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
Is there any more discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Hawker.
Mr. Chairman, perhaps if I could, through the chair, direct a question to here. And could you please correct me if my understanding and recollection of this is incorrect, this circumstance. Sometime back the late 70s, early 80s, when CFAB was getting started, CFAB was subject to an outside audit only and was not subject to the examination by the bank examiner's examination. And am I correct in recollecting, and I tell you this is deep in some foggy memory here, but am I correct in recalling that the outside audit identified circumstances or brought circumstances to the attention of the board of directors of CFAB and subsequently to the legislature that resulted in the legislature putting in the requirement that there be a bank examination of CFAB?
Representative Hawker, through the chair, I asked my staff to delve into the archives and found the following, that the division was invited to audit CFAB or examine it on April 29, 1985. To report about the viability of the bank. at the request of the Spokane Bank of Cooperatives, which is one of their lending institutions. And evidently, the outside auditors, as you recall, had identified problems. And to try to deal with that perceived crisis, they turned to the bank examiners as a body of personnel who could accomplish that, both for the state, which at that time had $32 million invested, and for the other creditors.
And continuing up, Mr. Chairman, and again, as I recall that circumstance, the examiners were viewed as a, as was discussed here earlier, the as a very effective tool within the state to pursue and protect the state's investment, even though the examiners would not traditionally involve themselves in a cooperative institution like this with a limited loan portfolio and effectively an under a cooperative arrangement, rather than pursuing commercial banking interests where you have large portfolios of many persons individually at risk in participating in an institution, where here, again, it's much more voluntary and a much more limited participation in the portfolios of the institution. I echo it was mentioned here earlier, I'm a bit surprised that, in fact, in the previous legislation, that the bank examiner's activities were not sunsetted, to have us come back and decide, well, you know, is the items fixed? Is the bank performing, the cooperative now performing, and would again reverting to the reliance upon the external examination, the outside auditor's annual review, which in fact identified the problems that resulted in bringing the examiners in for some additional attention that was warranted at the time. I guess I'm coming down on the side of not quite understanding why the bank itself desires the extra regulation, but truly believing that the best interests of the state of Alaska are protected and certainly adequately served by an outside examination only at this time, which I do believe would identify any change in circumstances that would warrant, once again, coming back to the legislature, as was done in 1985, and requesting additional support and oversight of the institution, sir. So, thank you.
You care to wrap up, Representative?
I mean, here's an entity that's asking for this oversight. And I guess the point that we can wait till there's serious problems to where an outside auditor feels it is necessary, I don't see the point. It would be an entirely different situation to me if they were paying nothing for it or they didn't want it. But to the extent, and I don't pretend to understand all of the details of what they do, but to the extent that CFAB says, we like this, it helps us in our business development, and they pay some portion, maybe not all, but it's only 10 days and $6,000, and maybe, you know, if we're only getting half of what we should, that's $6,000 of expense that we're not being recovered for. But it whatever function appeals to the CFAB bank in this regard, let's let them have it. We still get the vast majority of the savings from Section 1 because we're changing the oversight on all those other small banks, and appropriately so. But I guess I just got convinced by CFAB saying this helps us do our job better, and I think we should.
I agree with the sponsor. I think we're trying to cut costs here, and this certainly helps and streamlines our direction of the state. Call for the question. Roll call vote.
Representative Jewell?
Yes.
Representative Meyer?
Nope.
Representative Stoltz?
No.
Representative Whitaker?
Pass.
Representative Croft?
Yes.
Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Hawker?
No.
Representative Harris?
Yes.
Representative Williams?
No.
Representative Whitaker?
No.
3A, 7A, or 6A.
Amendment is defeated. What's the wishes of the committee? Representative Foster.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and move out to HB 159 out of committee with individual recommendations and attach this amendment.
Any objections to the motion? Move from committee with individual recommendations. Attach this one up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we're going to hear 166, and we're here till 4 o'clock, and it's not my intention to move the bill anyway. But we can hear it. I guess we're supposed to be waiting for the other one to come over, and I don't know how you want to do this, if we just want to reschedule it.
Where's the other bill at?
I don't know. It's on the Senate side. They want us to hold for that.
We have it for? You guys got something here?
There's something here, yeah.
I'll hold it here, and we'll
see. Yes, I'll hold it here. I'm on this. Make it move a little faster than we can. Let's see how far we can get with this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Joanne Gibbons, and I'm the Program Administrator for the Division of Family and Youth Services. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on this bill. HB 166 would repeal current statute, which requires the Department of Health and Social Services to conduct an annual review of the subsidy amounts that are being paid to subsidized adoption and guardianship parents. Those payments are designed to assist, are federally required and also statutorily required, and are designed to assist parents who adopt or become legal guardians of hard-to-place children with extreme special needs. The initial intent of this statute was designed to result in some cost containment, but the way that the program works and with the federal requirements around the subsidy program, cost containment has not been the end result of the annual review. The annual review generally results in an increase in the amount of subsidies that are awarded, and also is a cost to the department in terms of staff time. Oftentimes there's overtime costs associated with the annual review process and those types of things. So the elimination of the annual review process creates a cost savings by providing cost containment to existing subsidy amounts and by eliminating the staff time to process the mailouts and processing of the existing annual reviews and the necessary follow-up for subsidy increase requests. And as you can see in the attached in the fiscal note that you have before you, we are projecting that an annual savings in general funds of approximately $185,000 per year. I do want to emphasize that the elimination of the annual review process does not eliminate the right of an adoptive parent or a guardian to request a review of their subsidy. And so that right currently exists for them to request that at any time. It will continue to be in effect. And so it will not affect that in any way. But it would be a cost savings for the department in order to not go through this formalized process on an annual basis. Any answer any questions?
Mr. Chairman, I assume you only ask for a review if you think you're underpaid rather than overpaid. So I'm just wondering if the savings is in the cost of doing the reviews or on the payment side.
Through the chair, we believe the savings will be in both areas.
And a breakdown would be. I asked maybe it's over, but I guess maybe for the next time.
Representative.
Yeah, I'd like to know how much is it in the people you have for the mail out and how much in the savings you expect from not having increases?
Through the chair, I don't have that breakdown, but I can certainly get that for the committee.
We will bring this forth again.
Yeah.
Representative Harris.
Just real briefly, the people that have undertaken the task of a subsidized adoption, taking it in a very hard to place. Will they be notified that, at least notified through the mail or some other way, that they, it's their responsibility to appeal? In other words, if they believe that they're not, you know, getting enough money to take care of the problems that they have with the child, will they know that? Are you, is the department going to make sure they understand that it's their responsibility to apply for a review rather than it automatically happening?
Through the chair, yes. They currently are told that as part of the negotiation process and part of awarding the subsidy. But we do plan on notifying all current subsidized adoptive parents and guardians, if this bill were to become law, that their subsidy can be reviewed at any time. But they do need to notify us. When they feel there's a change in their circumstances that might warrant an increase or a decrease in their subsidy. We do get families that notify us and say, thank you very much. We don't feel we need this amount of money anymore. those certainly are not the majority, but we actually do every year get notification from families.
We need to take a vote on it.
any further questions for the sponsor? If not, thank you, and we'll pull this over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I had to throw that out. Couldn't resist.
What are we going to do next week, Billy?
Or tomorrow. You don't have a meeting tomorrow.
Really?
You are. Thank you.
And I'm sorry that I didn't get back to the minority members yesterday, but
we figured it out.
You have a bill up here, Senator Bundy, or what's the deal?
I watched that LBNA for
no, bring Senator Bundy up.
It's still going to happen.
We're in session right now.
Get out of here. Executive session.
Yeah, Larry, you doing anything important?
Yeah.
Or is it just House bills?
We'll be through here in about 1 minute.
We haven't taken up the bad stuff, the Senate bill.
We do have a schedule for next week. I don't know what our budget schedule
Thursday,
is.
Thursday, we're going to begin budget hearings on Thursday.
Public hearings?
Public hearings, Thursday, Friday at least, maybe Saturday.
So we'll have budget hearings next week with bills, I think, on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday, I believe. Representative Stoltz.
I just, for anybody out there that may have missed it, my staff didn't call, my subcommittee closeout for public safety previously scheduled for 3:30 to 4 o'clock today is going to be sometime tomorrow.
Okay.
Get the Calgary Roundup and get them going.
Here's our schedule for next week, March 31st. We'll hear House Bill 152, Health Facilities Medicaid Rates. House Bill 153, Medicaid Cost Containments and Priority List. And on Tuesday, we'll hear House Bill 172, Medicaid Children, Pregnant Women. And House Bill 57, Royalty Gas Contracts Agreement. House Bill on April 2nd, we'll hear House Bill 75, Appropriations. House Bill 76, Mental Health Budget. Thursday, we'll have public hearings, statewide services, 9 to 11 Juneau. I think you could just follow this in the book. And the public should know that we will start public hearings on Thursday, 9:30, and on Friday. And possibly Saturday, we'll be meeting here on this. With that, there's nothing more to come before the committee. This committee's adjourned.
All yours, Dave.